The second impeachment trial of President Trump. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Scott Detrow. Listening along with us this morning, NPR congressional reporter Claudia Grisales, NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith, NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
Just to remind you where we are at this point, this morning it was expected that the Senate would move quickly along, possibly to a vote on at least one article of impeachment against former President Trump. But then a lead manager, the House lead impeachment manager, Jamie Raskin, said he wanted to subpoena a witness.
We would like the opportunity to subpoena Congresswoman Herrera regarding her communications with House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, and to subpoena her contemporaneous notes that she made regarding what President Trump told Kevin McCarthy in the middle of the insurrection. We would be prepared to proceed by Zoom deposition of an hour or less, just as soon as Congresswoman Herrera Butler is available, and to then proceed to the next phase of the trial, including the introduction of that testimony shortly thereafter.
And things got tense after that. Here's the former president's lawyer, Michael Vanderveen.
The only thing that I ask, if you vote for witnesses, do not handcuff me by limiting the number of witnesses that I can have.
Vanderveen went on to say this.
None of these depositions should be done by Zoom. We didn't do this hearing by Zoom. These depositions should be done in person, in my office, in Philadelphia.
Now, this actually prompted open laughter in the room at that point. Senator Pro Tem Patrick Leahy had to tell everyone to please maintain decorum. And things are quite fluid now as we have lawmakers wrestling with what this could mean, this idea of what the rules would be around having witnesses. I want to go to our panel now because we have several open questions. I covered Congress a million years ago, but I do remember what it's like when they all want to leave town. So Claudia Grisales, set the stage for the timing right now.
Yes. So sometimes it seems that a recess can motivate Congress like nothing else. And the Senate did have a recess slated to begin next week. President's Day on Monday was considered a holiday. They were supposed to be gone all next week in their districts. And so it's really unclear now if they're going to be able to meet that deadline in order to leave town. So that's going to be an open question as they're dealing with these witnesses as well.
We're also talking about the articles of impeachment themselves and the idea of incitement. Nina, can you jump in today and give us a sense of some of the debate that's been going on about the president and his role in the attack on the Capitol?
Well, it's very difficult to prove incitement in a court of law because you have to prove intent by the speaker to incite immediate violent action. And that's under a Supreme Court ruling from 1969. That's not to say you can't prove it, but the Supreme Court has not had any case that they took since then about the subject. But of course, what you have to prove in a court of law is not what you have to prove in an impeachment proceeding. And to look backwards, the ultimate example of this was the Clinton impeachment. There's no doubt that lying under oath in a civil deposition is a crime. Now, it's true that most prosecutors might not waste their time on such a crime involving a sexual liaison, but that doesn't change the fact that it's a crime. He was not convicted of when he was impeached and tried in the Senate, in large part because the majority of the Senate concluded that this was not a personal peccadillo, which might be a crime in a court of law, is not a high crime and misdemeanor. The Founding Fathers made pretty clear that by high crime and misdemeanor, they meant something really big and important. Treason, insurrection, perhaps incitement to riot on the Capitol grounds, and that it was up to the Senate to determine what was a high crime and misdemeanor, not the criminal law.
Tamara Keith, you covered the Trump White House. You cover the Biden White House now. I want to ask you about both of those. Let's start with the former president. The question here and the reason that House Democrats have subpoenaed Jamie Herrera Butler, the Washington State Republican, is that they have a lot of questions about what President Trump was doing once the attack on the Capitol began. Remind us of the situation here, what they're trying to figure out, what they don't know.
One question is what the president did or didn't do to try to stop the insurrection once it was clear that the Capitol had been overrun. And Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House, had a heated phone call with President Trump. That has been reported. And now Congresswoman Herrera Butler has said that McCarthy told her and others that during that call, President Trump first said that maybe it was Antifa that was causing the attack. McCarthy told him, no, it wasn't. And that then President Trump said, well, these people care more about the election or more upset about the election than you are. So that is the story that the House impeachment managers are trying to get into the record by hearing from Herrera Butler.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't on the phone with President Trump, which raises an interesting question.
Let's remind everybody that before the trial began, the House Democrats did ask to interview, to depose the former president, who said that he was not interested in doing that. Jamie Raskin said that former President Trump is also a key figure in all of this. He made that point again today.
There's only one person the president's counsel really needs to interview, and that's their own client. And bring him forward, as we suggested last week, because a lot of this is matters that are in his head. Why did he not act to defend the country after he learned of the attack? Why was he continuing to press the political case?
Tam, Republicans in the chamber, from the responses that we're seeing on Twitter and that Claudia is providing us, seem to be indicating, all right, if you want to open the door to the witnesses, we could go a whole lot of different directions. Still seems pretty unlikely, to me at least, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, that former President Trump is brought in as a witness.
It does seem pretty unlikely, but you never know. That said, in his last impeachment, there was also teased the idea that he could maybe testify. Or in the Mueller investigation, it was teased that maybe he could testify. Ultimately, he answered some questions in writing. It does seem pretty unlikely that we would hear from President Trump. But, Republicans also have talked about, well, what about someone like Nancy Pelosi? They have raised the idea that the delay in the National Guard coming to rescue the House of Representatives, to rescue the Capitol, that the delay was not President Trump's fault. That is one of the key questions that we have not gotten a satisfactory answer to, and getting people under oath might help with, is why did it take so long for the National Guard to come? And the mayor's office in Washington, D.C. said that they were begging. There are a number of reports of various officials begging for help and the help not coming. Why did that help not come is one of the key questions. Also, why wasn't it there in the first place is
right.
Another question.
And before we speculate too much on witnesses, we should talk about what we know at this point about what the process might be, what it might actually look like to have witnesses. We're getting some guidance from our editors here on the Washington desk that this would involve a resolution that would have witnesses deposed first, and then managers and the defense would have a time to review any of these documents, and that some of this would be done in a closed session. Claudia Grisales, am I getting this right?
Yeah, that's right. So now that the Senate has voted to subpoena witnesses and documents in this trial, that provides that the managers and the defense could have time for a review of any documents that they do obtain. This would be done in closed session.
Meaning not in front of the senators, right, who are the jurors, quote unquote, in this trial.
Exactly. And the impeachment managers should mention this subpoena for Representative Herrera Butler, but it's unclear who else they would want to depose. And again, Trump's defense team has said he would need over 100. His team would need over 100 depositions if this is the direction they're going to go in.
So is the clock ticking legally or politically when people get worried about how many witnesses there might be?
It's probably more politically. Democrats, as we've mentioned, want to rush through this process. They want to get to Biden's agenda. Republicans, of course, want to rush through this process because it does deal with the former president. And they want to get this chapter behind them. It highlights a really, really difficult conversation for them. So politically, that's where this is more of a danger in terms of what they're looking at and how they proceed forward.
Nina, I saw you nodding there. Do you want to jump in?
No, I just, it's if they have a moment here, the House managers, where they actually have pried open the door And they might be able to, under normal circumstances, make a very strong case even stronger. But the counter to that is that this is a political process. There is a new president. We are in the midst of both a health and economic crisis, and the president needs to get his work done.
Tamara Keith, we were talking about the political consequences of this before. Remind us how the Biden White House has dealt with this trial occupying the Senate this week, and how quickly they want to move forward on their agenda in that Senate.
They want to move forward yesterday. They are trying to get a $1.9 trillion rescue package, the American rescue package, as they call it, passed to have direct aid to Americans, to help pay to rush out vaccines for the coronavirus. They have a big agenda, and this certainly was not part of the plan for their big agenda. But I do want to say that we still don't know what's going to happen. This quorum call is a moment where senators are talking to each other, trying to figure out a path forward. Often this is the time when deals are made about how to proceed. Mm-hmm. And this could change. Things could certainly change. We just don't know, what this all means at this moment.
So much is unprecedented. This is the first time in American history a president was impeached twice. This is the first time in American history that a former president is on trial. And now we thought we had certainty of a trial that was going to wrap up with a vote to acquit or convict today. And now we're sitting here on the air. Every single one of us has had a lot of experience reporting on Capitol Hill, but we don't know what's going to happen next because the senators don't know what's going to happen next because they're standing on the floor trying to figure that out as the House Democrats and the Trump defense have left the floor to also try and figure this out.
This might be a good moment to remind people exactly the articles of impeachment that we're talking about here and what's at stake. What exactly are the main questions that House Democrats are trying to put to this group of senators? Claudia.
Yes. And so this is going to be something that they need to entertain as kind of they're navigating these next steps. For example, we just heard from our Capitol Hill pool reporters that Bruce Castor told them that they plan to call, quote, lots of witnesses.
And he's on the Trump defense team.
And he is on the Trump defense team. So this kind of raises the specter of how unpredictable this all is right now, how fluid this all is right now. As I mentioned previously, they were set to do a recess next week. They had set a confirmation hearing for Merrick Garland to be the attorney general. This was supposed to be a two-day hearing when they came back from this break on February 22nd. As this is still fluid, it still raises questions as to how they're going to have to plan this out if there are new steps that they add to the trial today.
Right. And the focus here on this evenly divided Senate about voting about whether the former president can be held accountable specifically for inciting the January 6th siege on the Capitol. People have had a close watch on the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, just for the mere fact that he sort of let this trial, so to speak, go forward. But are there other votes since? What else have we heard from his office that is raising questions for people?
Yes. Yeah, so our colleague Susan Davis confirmed this morning that he issued a statement to his to the members in his party in the Senate, telling them he will vote not to convict. This is very parallel to McConnell's behavior leading up to the trial in terms of his votes on the constitutionality of the trial. Just days after the insurrection, it appeared in the impeachment of the former president, McConnell appeared open. He left the door open to possibly not only being in favor of this trial, but voting to convict the president. It seemed to be an opening for the party to finally move past this chapter with Trump and start a new one. But as we saw this vote approach with the constitutionality of the trial, mm-hmm. Representative Rand Paul of Kentucky brought that up as a bit of a test before the floor in January. He saw that his party was not ready for that divorce from Trump and voted with the majority of his party to say that it was not constitutional. So again, we're seeing that he's moving not to convict again.
So we are waiting to see what happens next. The Senate is in a quorum trying to figure out how to proceed now that the Senate has voted to move forward with at least one witness. A lot more to come. We're going to take a short break. You are listening to live special coverage from NPR News.
And this is Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us for continued live coverage from NPR of the Senate impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump.
Support for WPR comes from All of Us Wisconsin, dedicated to helping speed up health research breakthroughs by asking 1 million people to share health information. Details at joinallofus.org/Wisconsin.
Support comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Whether you need information about Medicare, housing options, home care, or accessible transportation, the ADRC is the place to start. Their services are free. Call 262-605-6646.
You are listening to live special coverage from NPR News. This is the Senate impeachment trial of former President Trump. The day began with what we expected to be closing arguments from both sides. That is not what happened. The lead impeachment manager on the House Democratic side, Jamie Raskin, called for a witness. He called for Jamie Herrera Butler, a Washington State Republican, to be deposed. I'm Scott Detrow, along with Audie Cornish.
And we are also joined by NPR congressional reporter Claudia Grisales, our White House correspondent Tamara Keith, and legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. We were supposed to start the day, moving fairly quickly. That was the implication last night before this kind of switch, so to speak. I want to start with you, Claudia, about what was happening this morning that changed the direction.
Yes, so there was a shift to call witnesses. This is a big question mark we've had all week. Senior aides to the House impeachment team declined to say if they would move towards this. This is a card they kept close to the vest. But the expectation among Senate members was there would not be witnesses, that they would wrap this trial very quickly. And they did not have any sense that witnesses would be called. But again, we saw this statement issued by Representative Jamie Herrera Butler last night recounting this conversation she learned from House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on the day of the insurrection with then President Trump, that it was a heated conversation, and Trump accused McCarthy of not caring about his presidency in this election as much as perhaps these insurrectionists who were in the midst of attacking the Capitol. And so this put a lot of pressure on the House impeachment managers. We saw Senate Democrats this morning saying the only way to address these new statements by Herrera Butler is to call witnesses, and that's what we saw managers do this morning. They moved to it. This is an issue that could have come back to haunt them had they not called for witnesses, because we are looking at continued investigations, a potential 9/11 style commission that will look into the insurrection. And there could have been questions there of why didn't the managers call witnesses? Why didn't they dig deeper on some of these hanging details that we still don't know the answers
and
to?
And two things. This was somewhat unexpected, some color from the pool reporting that we're seeing. Senator Bill Cassidy was asked whether he was expecting this, and he threw up his hands and says, Shelby's been here. He's seen three of these, and he calls this the craziest, referencing Senator Richard Shelby. There's a lot of questions right now. There's a lot of huddling right now about what this means, how to move forward. The reason why it's significant is because it's getting at the idea of the president's actions at the moment of the attack, and this gets to a key point of the articles of impeachment. Nina, can you just remind us what the articles are that House managers are putting forth for a vote?
Well, it's a single article, but it's really a very interesting article because it doesn't just say accuse the president of inciting a riot. It accuses him of deliberately laying the tinder of a fire by, for months, telling people what he knew to be a lie, what everybody else knew to be a lie. Which
and these
was
are
the
all the videos that they've shown this week, right?
Yes.
Talking about his
right.
comments and
videos,
tweets.
Videos, tweets, and actions. Because his actions were, he went to court. And he lost every time. 61 out of 62 times. And the 62nd time was a minor procedural matter. So he lost every time in front of Democratic judges, in front of Republican judges, even in front of Trump judges, and he didn't even get a whiff from the Supreme Court every time he or his allies went up there.
And Nina, that's important context, because a big part of the defense that we heard from former President Trump's lawyers was that when he was urging people to fight, when he was saying we need to fight this, they say he was just urging his supporters to engage in the normal political process, to primary lawmakers that they disagreed with. Of course, President Trump had called on lots of things, very little of which was within the norms of politics over the past few months, including directly pressuring state legislatures to overturn the results of their state's elections and appoint electoral college slates that would vote for him, not Joe Biden.
And an important part of that impeachment article is the specific that he sought to pressure state officials, and in particular Georgia state officials, threatening them with potential criminal prosecution if they didn't find, quote, enough votes, meaning 10,700 and I don't remember how many, just one more than Biden already had so that he could win the state. And those individuals have said in countless interviews that that set off a chain of that his abuse in his Twitter feed and in his comments also set off a chain of death threats and other adverse consequences that put them in fear of their lives, not to mention in fear of their liberty, because as the Secretary of State, who was a former Trump supporter and Republican, said, it made him think that he might be criminally prosecuted if Trump were reelected. That's what Trump was threatening him with. He said it was very intimidating. But he said to the president, Mr. President, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't win the election in this state.
And all of those other
state officials in Michigan and elsewhere did the same.
And yesterday, Trump's defense team read long transcripts of that phone call, trying to make the case that what the former president did was proper. We do know now that Fulton County's district attorney has opened a criminal investigation into what happened on that phone call. With many things in the Trump era, which ended but didn't fully end because here we are in this trial, we are into the political unknown now. The Senate is in a quorum call trying to figure out next steps. The Senate has voted to subpoena at least one witness. Former President Trump's defense team responded by saying that they would like to call hundreds of witnesses. If the doors are open, they need to be wide open. We have now heard from one of the former president's attorneys. Reporters tracked him down in the hallway. This is Bruce Castor.
Are you guys going to call? Do you know how many witnesses you'll call?
Lots.
It's Bruce Castor, one of the Trump attorneys whose performance was reportedly, Tamara Keith, you reported that former President Trump was not pleased with his first performance. Since then, he has kind of faded into the background. Michael Vanderveen has taken the lead here, but Bruce Castor echoing his colleague, saying lots of witnesses.
Oh, and to add to that, Claudia Grisales, we have some detail maybe from one of the senators, right, about what they're doing with this time.
That's right. Kansas Senator Jerry Moran told these Capitol Hill Pool reporters on what is happening now for Republicans is an attempt at the moment to see what the parameters of witnesses might be. But he says it's got to be fair and not lopsided. They want to make certain that the time necessary to take depositions of witnesses occurs. And he thinks it's nothing that could happen immediately. He thinks this is going to take some significant time to get accomplished.
Again, underscoring that this was a surprise this morning and been a little bit of question mark for lawmakers to figure out.
Exactly.
Well, as we all try to figure out what is happening, we have somebody on the line who might have a little bit more of a sense than we do, maybe just as much as the senators who seem confused, and that is Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff of California, who, of course, was the lead impeachment manager the last time Trump was impeached about a year ago. Hi, Congressman.
Hi, how are you?
We were speaking last night, and you said that you thought there were a lot of open questions, particularly when it came to what Trump was doing in the White House while the attack was taking place. But you said you did not expect the Democrats to move forward with witnesses. What do you think changed? Why do you think they took this step?
I think those late-breaking developments with Congresswoman Butler, her statement, her call to other patriots to come forward, made the decision a pretty easy one, that look, she voted for impeachment in the House. She had a conversation with Kevin McCarthy about it. It's clear what she has to say. So there's little risk in calling her, and she may open the door to others coming forward. And given that Mitch McConnell has now said basically he's going to throw his lot along with those who want to use that constitutional fig leaf, there's a little downside to calling a witness who's as strong as Herrera Butler.
Why start with Herrera Butler, though? Why not subpoena Kevin McCarthy, who is the person who had the phone call?
Because Kevin McCarthy went and did that pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago, and when he did that, he basically said, I'm throwing in my lot with Donald Trump. I am hinging our party to Donald Trump. The only chance we have of gaining the majority in 2 years, I am tying to Donald Trump. So he has every incentive now to protect Donald Trump. And Kevin McCarthy, frankly, is not known for his candor. And so do you really want to call someone like that and rely on someone like that when you have Congresswoman Herrera Butler, who has shown courage and integrity? I think she's a far better witness. I think that she has none of the risk, all of the benefit, and may open the door to others coming forward.
What do you think happens next? Right now, the Senate is in a quorum call. We have moved forward on this vote to subpoena, to hear testimony from one person, Congresswoman Herrera Butler. Trump's defense team has responded that they want to call hundreds of witnesses going forward. What is your best guess right now of what this does to the timeline of the trial? Do you expect the Senate to recess for today, to bring up this Zoom link right now? What do you think happens next?
Well, I think what happens next, and first of all, that defense argument, we're going to call hundreds of witnesses. We heard the same thing in the last trial. That is, if you call John Bolton, we're going to delay this trial endlessly. Now, that only worked because they had a majority of senators last year under Republican control who wanted to end the trial and didn't want the facts to come out. It's a different majority this year. And that majority is not going to allow 100 irrelevant witnesses just so that the Trump defense can delay and exact a pound of flesh for calling for one relevant witness. So I do think that what will happen is you may have a vote today on Herrera Butler, which I expect would be approved to depose and subpoena her. They'll work out the timing and logistics, although the vote may set how the deposition is to be conducted. Herrera Butler will probably need time to have a lawyer who can be present and represent her during the deposition. And it may be that the Trump defense identifies some witnesses that they want to have a vote on today, or it may very well be that the deposition of this witness goes forward, giving the Trump defense time team time to decide, okay, which witness or witnesses do they want to make an argument for, and then on the conclusion of the first deposition, they make an argument for another deposition. But I don't think a majority of senators is going to simply allow the Trump defense team to bring people in who don't have relevant testimony, who merely they're calling for political points. So I don't think we're going to see that kind of a spectacle.
My colleague Claudia Grisales, our congressional reporter, has a question for you.
Yes, Representative Schiff, thanks for your time on this. Wanted to get a sense from you, compared to last year, the trial a year ago, how is this trial playing out in your eyes? What is standing out to you so far, and how different is it?
Well, it's a very different because the case that we had to put on last year was one in which we were fighting the sitting president and the majority in the Senate to get the evidence, to get the documents, to get the witnesses. We had no cooperation, and it was a complicated fact pattern where the president of the United States was coercing a foreign leader at war with Russia, withholding military aid to get that foreign leader to help smear his political opponent, to help him cheat in the election. The senators there were not witnesses. They had to try to imagine what it was like to have your military aid cut off while you're at war and being leveraged that way, coerced that way by the President of the United States, and what that meant to our security. These senators, they don't need to step into anyone else's shoes. They were there. They saw what happened with these marauders, and they just saw a videotape that could not be more powerful of themselves, which they had never seen, scurrying through that Capitol to safety. So a very different kind of a case to present, a very different majority in the Senate to present it to, a majority that is actually willing to hear the evidence, but nonetheless the same political dynamic where Republicans are worried about their base, and it's going to require courage, the kind of courage that Mitt Romney demonstrated, for those senators to follow their oath. I don't think there's much debate that if this were a secret vote,